Com.
Hello, what's up, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 26th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 90 minutes or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for our Thursday meeting show. We'll start things off with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com with this week's Powers Picks segment. Then we'll talk some college basketball capping with Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Then we've added Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com to the bill for today. We'll chat with him about the UFC on Fox event here coming up this weekend. So we've got our 90-minute mega show. Lots of strong stuff coming your way here from three of our favorite guests. Go ahead and bring in the first one. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
You know what? Never been better in my entire life, Adam. Always a pleasure to listen to your fine voice on this fine Thursday morning.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your time, as always. I know you got a lot of things going on here. We've talked about this before. I mean, football drives the bus in this industry. I know that you're a football guy. First and foremost, that's not to say that you don't do college basketball in the NBA, but got to be kind of bittersweet to see the NFL season coming to an end here, no?
Yeah, I mean, it's more college than NFL for me, but no question. I mean, anytime football season wraps up, you know what, I'll be honest with you, I have mixed emotions. I love football more than anything. I'm single, no kids, no wife. Football is probably one of my loves of my life and arguably the most thing I'm passionate about. So, yeah, it's bittersweet because on one hand, you know, I'm sad to see the season go, but it's such a grind for 4 to 5 months that there's part of me that's happy to see it go. And for me personally, I take great pleasure in the off-season grind, finding value in the off-season numbers. So it's actually transitioning to one of my favorite times of the year, and that's trying to find value where, you know, those opening numbers that we'll see, it's just me against the book and not me against not only the bookmaker and the odds makers, but also the entire betting world.
Well, we'll talk about that more here in a couple of weeks when we get past the Super Bowl and we can discuss. We've already discussed some of your preparations for college football. And, of course, we talked on last week's show about the week one lines that are available out there at Five Dimes. And I haven't checked, actually. Have any of those really moved around a whole lot yet or no?
Yeah, you know, Tennessee's gotten a little bit of action. They're 3.5. They're now up to 6. That'll be a Monday night game played in the brand-new stadium there in Atlanta, Georgia. California, surprisingly, has gotten a little bit of action. They were about a 10-point underdog. They're down to +7.5 at North Carolina in week one. Notre Dame got some very early action. You know, Florida got driven right through a key 7 number against Michigan in that game. They were 7.5. Now they're 6.5-point underdogs. But other than that, not too significant line moves. Alabama's up to 4.5 in the marquee game, which could be number one versus number two. In the opener there, they were 3.5, 4, now up to 4.5. But keep in mind, I mean, you're probably dealing with 500 bet limits and maybe even less than that at Five Dimes. And any one $500 bet could be moving that line a half a point.
Well, as we talked about, and as we'll keep talking about here as we go forward throughout the spring, the college football timeline has really been accelerated now. So, Brad, you shouldn't have to wait too long to start putting in some of those win totals and some of those other week one lines, because Chris Andrews at the South Point is sure to have this stuff out very, very early and probably even earlier this year than he did last year. But let's look at Super Bowl 51 here. New England takes on Atlanta. New England, 3-point favorite. A lot of these were flat numbers yesterday when we did the show with -110. Now a lot of them back up to New England -3, -15. A few shops out there still hanging at flat. Some of them kind of in the 120 range, depending on how public of a book you're looking at. First and foremost, your thoughts on the line for this game?
I think it's rock solid, to be honest with you. I think if you just went by stats, Atlanta's the better team. You just look at yards per play. That's a favorite wise guy stat. I mean, Atlanta's not only number one in yards per play on offense, but you look at the yards per play differential between offense and defense. They're clearly number one in the National Football League. In fact, the difference between one and two is as great as the difference between the number two and number 14 teams. The problem with New England is they overachieve as far as their stats say. I mean, a lot of it's coaching, a lot of it's hidden yardage, hidden stats as far as turnovers and stuff like that. So, and obviously, you definitely got to give New England some point spread credit for being here and done that. I mean, the Belichick and Brady thing. So I'll be honest with you. Three's a good rock solid number. That's why we haven't seen it really move too much outside the big. Yeah, I think the total's too high. I'm going to wait, though, because I know the public wants to bet the over a lot. So I'm going to wait on that. But when it's all said and done, you know, if you're telling me at the current 3 and 58, 58 and a half number, what would be my money? Most of my money, and again, it's not going to be my biggest bet of the year. That's never going to be the case when it comes to the Super Bowl. But, you know, I'll be definitely contrarian and probably play under the highest Super Bowl total in history.
You know, what amazes me about New England is there are not a whole lot of hidden things about this team. Everyone knows they're very good organizationally. They're very, very sound, very structured. They turn guys that seem like they're average nobodies into, you know, really good players. I mean, Tom Brady does that. The defensive scheme does that. The coaching staff maximizes talent better than any other one in the NFL. Everybody knows this. And somehow this team went 15-3 against the number in the 18 games leading up to this one.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I mean, if you've been betting New England just every single week for the last 15 years since that original Super Bowl run that they had there back in 2001, I forget. It's up to like maybe plus 60 games. I think it's like 58% against the spread. I mean, win or lose, there's some people saying that, you know, win or lose the Super Bowl as far as covering the spread. I mean, it's still going to be one of the greatest ATS seasons that we've ever seen. They're a very public team. They continue to cash. And, you know, the wise guys and the sharper plays love crunching numbers. And the problem is, you know, New England, year after year after year, always plays better and always the final score is always better than what the stats indicate. So, you know, people just haven't learned their lesson, particularly sharper players, to be honest with you, because we know the public likes betting New England more often than not. So, I mean, it's just they're a machine. And I'll say this, while statistically – and me just looking on the field performances, I'd love to play Atlanta in this one and have an Atlanta ticket, but it's awfully hard to go against that machine that continues to overachieve and exceed expectations, even though that year after year, I mean, the expectations are high, if not higher than any other franchise out there.
Well, we can dig a lot deeper into this game here coming up on next week's shows because, I mean, really that's going to be the big thing to talk about next week. We'll also talk about prop bets with all of our handicapper guests. But a couple of things I want to pick your brain about here, Brad. The first is one of the reasons that the Patriots are so good is because they take care of the football. So what ultimately ends up happening is that they win the field position battle. They make the opposition drive long fields. So they have a lot of success in that regard because a lot of times they're not playing teams that are equipped to drive long fields against them. In this year's NFL, there's nobody more equipped to drive long fields than Atlanta.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, if we're just looking turnovers, both teams are at the top of the NFL. I mean, New England's plus 12, Atlanta's plus 11. Atlanta's offense, I think the wise guys, you know, knew that it was rather historic pretty much from the outset, or at least after the first four or five games of the season, after they dropped 48 on Carolina, I think, in week four. I think the public's been slow to seeing just how good this Atlanta offense is. I mean, here's the problem with, you know, defending Atlanta, and obviously New England's going to probably try to take away Julio Jones. That's just what they do. They take your key playmaker and just try to, you know, completely get him out of the game plan. Well, Atlanta's the type of team that has five or six playmakers. I mean, they got two running backs that not only – are very adept, obviously, at hurting you in the ground game, but also can catch the ball in the backfield. I mean, they have Sanu. They have Gabriel. I mean, Matt Ryan's done as good of a job as anybody in the history of the NFL this year as far as spreading the ball around. I believe it's been a dozen guys have got a touchdown pass from him. So, I mean, Kyle Shanahan's got things rolling. It's, you know, obviously Atlanta's going to really miss him when he leaves for the 49ers, but I think it's one of the most balanced offenses I've ever seen. And I know Carolina's offense got a lot of credit coming into last year's Super Bowl, but I truly believe this Atlanta offense is even better than that one. And, you know, yards per play, 6.7, has them top 10 all-time in the history of the National Football League.
So we can do everything that we want in terms of looking at this game statistically, numerically, looking at the X's and O's, but there are some intangibles here that we'll talk about over the next week and a half of shows, and I'll go ahead and start that with you because I want to get your take on these two things. What about the experience factor? New England, been here, done that. Atlanta, not so much. Does that play into the handicapping of this game? And do you feel like it's been built into the line at all?
I think it's definitely been built in the line. I mean, again, like I said, a lot of the stats, I mean, let's look at it. I mean, Atlanta, I mean, scoring offense, I mean, almost a touchdown more per game than New England. Obviously, New England's got the advantage in defense, but, I mean, let's keep in mind, New England's got the number one scoring defense in the National Football League, but they also face the number 32 strength of schedule, not only from, you know, just pure ratings as far as the overall teams that they play, but also the number 32 weakest schedule as far as opposing offenses that they face. So, yeah, New England stats are good, but they've also faced a very weak schedule. Plus, Atlanta's trend line on defense has definitely been trending upwards. I mean, you look at the last six games, they're giving up only 19 points per game. Had a lot of rookies and young guys that have been playing better. I do think the experience factor, because, I mean, I would just be honest with you, you know, maybe I give New England, you know, just looking at it, you know, 1.5 points. Maybe even it's a picking game. I know I talked with a couple of sharper guys. Says you take the names off the jerseys and just statistically broke these two teams down, specifically what's happened the last 5-6 weeks, and some have made the case that Atlanta be favored. So there's no question about it. The Belichick and Brady factor are definitely put into this line, and it's why the public's been overwhelmingly betting New England so far in the early markets here. The one thing that I'll say, maybe a hidden factor, I mean, look at Atlanta's head coach. I mean, Quinn is coaching in his third Super Bowl in 4 years. So keep in mind, he's the DC at Seattle for the 13 and 14 Super Bowl. So it's not going to be new to him. Yes, new to him as far as being a head coach, but I mean, he's used to the media here. It's the players that I worry about. Well, when your head man is used to it, I don't think that the experience factor is as big as what people are playing out to it, and definitely not as big as what the markets are pricing it at.
Well, and you just alluded to the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and something that people probably don't realize about this game is that this thing is a circus until you actually start the game. You have media days, you have media availability, families are coming in town, people are hitting you up for tickets. It's crazy for these players. There's a lot of stress going on. There's only so much that, you know, that the front office personnel can handle in terms of planning and preparing and all that. The players have to be made available for all these different types of things. There's a learning curve involved in that in terms of staying focused for the game. And that's more of what I mean when I talk about experience. I know I wanted to talk more about the base level of experience in terms of Tom Brady's played in Super Bowls. You know, some of these other guys for the Patriots have as well. Atlanta doesn't have that experience between the lines, but it's that experience leading up to the game that's also problematic.
No question. And again, I'm not as worried so much about the Atlanta coaching staff with Quinn. And then obviously Shanahan's born into the business. And I'm not concerned there. It's the players, the player personnel. I mean, let's face it, even Matt Ryan, as experienced as he is as a starting quarterback playing in his first Super Bowl, and just goes right down the line. I mean, I already mentioned that Atlanta, relatively young defense. And then, you know, they had some key acquisitions in the offseason. I don't think the acquisition of Alex Mack at center got enough play. But again, Alex Mack coming from the Cleveland Browns, he had prior to this season no postseason experience. So, yeah, I am worried about how the individual Atlanta Falcons players are going to handle media week, because it's just not your Matt Ryan's. Super Bowl media day is almost every player is getting interviewed. And obviously you're dealing with tickets from your family. It's going to be a new experience for almost everyone top down from Atlanta. So that would be my worry, not necessarily the coaches and how they prep, but definitely how the individual players handle the different stuff. So I think you make a great point there. And again, I think it's factored into the line, because just statistically, New England shouldn't be a 3-point favorite in this one.
No, I think if you look at it from a pure power rating standpoint, of course, this game on a neutral field in Houston, and both of these fan bases should travel well to this game as well. I certainly think that all of those factors, as you mentioned, are built into the line a little bit. Like I said, we'll talk more about the game next week, maybe some more of the in-depth matchup X's and O's stuff. And of course, we'll touch on Brad's props, but something I want to do here with both of our handicappers on today's show, with both of them being Vegas residents, I imagine some of our listeners are going to head out, make the pilgrimage to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. So want to get some recommendations, some thoughts from our handicappers that live out there in terms of where people should go, what they should do, any restaurant recommendations, all that type of thing. I mean, this isn't a pilgrimage like March Madness necessarily, but people will go out there for the Super Bowl, you know, the ability to bet props, watch the game in the sports book, all that. So, Brad, I guess the starting point here would be, for people that are coming in, what would be some of your recommended spots in terms of sports books to try and grab a seat?
Well, I don't know if I'm the best guy for this, but I'll tell you my favorite sports books. I mean, you start with the biggest one. I mean, obviously, the Westgate. Just from pure volume as far as being the biggest. You start there, but obviously that's going to be very packed, and all the sports books are going to be packed. And let me just tell you from a personal, just me personally, I'm not a big crowd guy. And number that's just to begin with, and keep in mind, a lot of times compared to what the public's betting, I'm usually on the opposite side. So you put me in a sports book and everybody else is on the other side. It's not necessarily the greatest things. I mean, I take great joy when I'm winning. I do not take joy whatsoever when, Joe Public's beating me in a game. So I'm not a guy that's I've been at the sports books probably four or five times throughout the course of the season, just sitting there and enjoying the games. A lot of times I'm just working and betting myself that I just don't have time to sit there and enjoy it. So, I would say, start off with the Las Vegas Superbook there, the Westgate, probably personal favorite just because they are going to be the home for college football. And plus they do have one of the best sports books and they're very handicapping friendly. The South Point, I know it's off the strip, but it's big. I know Chris Andrews, Jimmy Vaccaro, and it looks like Mr. Brent Musburger is going to be very active in that South Point casino. I'm sure we'll be talking about that throughout the off season. I think that's another good go-to spot. If you're looking for the local places, I live in Henderson. I think the Sunset Casino, their sports book's quite big. That's one that I'm only a couple miles away from, so I'm routinely in there. So I would say, Westgate, Las Vegas, Superbook, your South Point, and your Sunset Station sports books, that'll get you a good flavor there.
Well, and you notice that the common theme there is that all of them are off the strip, which – certainly makes some sense. When you talk about trying to go to a sports book on the strip for the Super Bowl, probably not the easiest thing to do. I was out there for Super Bowl 45, the Green Bay and Pittsburgh one. I watched it at the Westgate. That was before they did all the renovations that they've done here over the last couple of years. What I wound up doing was I sat down at a penny machine in the sports book just to have a seat, and I would hit the button every 5-10 minutes and just let it spin a couple of times, and then I would just go back to watching the game. So that was kind of how I held on to my seat there. I haven't been out there since they renovated it. I imagine they took all the slot machines out that were in the back corner there. Make sure that whatever you do, you get somewhere early because that's going to be the most important thing. And some places have Super Bowl parties. You can just pay for a ticket and get, food, drink, whatever the case may be. So keep an eye out for those as well. But what about, leading up to the game or maybe people that are staying Monday or Tuesday? How about some good eats? I'm sure you know about a few places like that.
Well, down on the Strip, you got more five-star restaurants than any single spot in the entire world. So, just some of the buffets at some of the places, are tremendous eats. The buffet at the Mirage is unbelievable, at the Bellagio, Caesar's Palace. If you want to eat, you can start with the buffet and get a lot of bang for your buck with those three. If you're going outside the Strip, I'm pretty much a homebody, so I don't go too far off here in Henderson. If you're staying in the Henderson area, there's a couple of local places here that aren't too bad. I'm a big deli guy. Weiss's Deli is a good spot to get a sandwich, and then you can head on down to the Strip. But I'll say this. If you're looking for bang for your buck, just go to the buffets at the Mirage, Caesar's Palace, the Bellagio. I promise you. You won't be disappointed for what you're getting as far as dollar for dollar.
Well, again, we'll crowdsource opinions here from our Las Vegas residents that come on the show and see what else they have to say. But, Brad, definitely appreciate your insights there with that for people that may be heading out that way. Another thing I definitely want to mention is lines are going to be a nightmare at some of these sports books. If you're trying to get in halftime wagering, if you want to get something in right before the game, be prepared to wait in line and to wait in line for quite a while. The people at the counter will try to get through as fast as they possibly can, but take some patience with you. And of course, try to plan ahead and, know what you want to bet, make sure that you're announcing it in the proper way, use the rotation numbers, all that type of thing. All that's really going to help you out. Brian, let's move over to the college basketball side here. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've noticed here. I know you were a little bit later to the college basketball game because you were focusing on college football so much. Is there anything you've picked up on, any big adjustments that you've had to make from your numbers that we talked about, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, you know, I'll be honest with you. You know, I was feeling my way the first couple of weeks here. I was probably more Joe Public than anything, you know, starting off with my numbers. Obviously, I put in more time as far as power rating every single team than just your local guy betting Duke and Kentucky. But, you know, I found a shift in my philosophy. And, it, you know, maybe it's just coincidence, but it started with this week here. I found myself moving from, you know, backing your favorites, your public teams that have been covering against the spread, to you know, leaning more towards the dogs than anything, specifically defensive dogs. And, you know, I'll give an example last night. You know, the overnight number for Florida State, Georgia Tech was 7.5 or 8. And that was about right. I had the game power rated at 9.5 from a pure power ratings, but I thought the situation was horrible for Florida State coming off of 6 straight games against ranked opponents. So that was worth a couple of points, in my opinion, downgrade. So I thought the early 7.5, 8 number was close, within a point of what I would put it at. But, you know, the public, and here's what I have noticed this week. I think the public's starting to get more involved in college hoops. I mean, you only got one football game left. And I think that they're rolling over the bankroll to the college hoop sides. And I don't think it's necessarily a coincidence that it's been the week of the upset, because, you know, even last night in that Georgia Tech-Florida State game, they drove that line. Maybe even some sharp people drove that line up to 10. It didn't make sense to me from a pure situational. Plus, you had Georgia Tech with 4 straight covers, all in the underdog role, including 2 outright upsets. Plus, it was a Georgia Tech defense that had a top 35 defense as far as defensive efficiency. So defensive dog getting double digits. Starting to see, I think I'm starting to see some inflation as far as your favorite public sides. And I think there's some value. You know, Virginia against Notre Dame, again, another defensive underdog that had dominated the series against Notre Dame. Public was overwhelmingly on Notre Dame, and why the heck not? Notre Dame had been a covering machine. So I actually, after meandering a little bit, had a good first week, a very bad second week. This third week here, I'm probably most comfortable with, because I'm starting to see some of my football favorite handicaps, your defensive home underdog, starting to come into play. And I think a lot of it is we're starting to see some inflation, line inflation, because I think the public's starting to get involved in college hoops much more than what they've been here the first couple months.
Well, the next thing I want to ask about was stats that you're looking at to evaluate teams here. And obviously it sounds like defensive efficiency, defensive metrics, certainly a foundation of your college basketball handicapping, but can you shed some light on some of the other things that you look at on a daily basis?
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone's – I would say the 2 power rankings that people look at more often. I'm going to caution people with this. So I'm going to say, you know, your KenPoms and your Sagarins are great. It's what the market looks at. It's handicapping 101 as far as college basketball. They are a great starting point, particularly if you're looking at defensive efficiencies. One thing I will say, though, be very wary of that, because they are taking into consideration the entire season. And they are not taking out, you know, key injuries. And maybe a key player missed 4 or 5 games. They are taking the totality of the season and not necessarily recency bias. You know, great example of that. You got to pay attention to player injuries. I saw last night the public overwhelmingly bet Creighton in that game against Georgetown. Folks, Maurice Watson Jr. now has been out. One of the best point guards in the entire country. That was his second game that he missed. Creighton had a upset loss the game prior to that one. I mean, this was one of the best point guards in the entire country, averaging 20 points per game, nearly 10 assists per game. And he was one of the all-time, as far as the active leaders in the NCAA, as far as assists. So he is out. Make sure you are paying attention to key injuries, because I didn't see it from the public last night in the Creighton game. And again, they got blown out laying a short number. That's one thing, and be very wary as far as, you know, looking at specific power ratings that only factor in the entire season on the whole and not specifically, you know, you can take those stats out for Creighton. That 18-1 start now, you can start throwing that in the window and start looking at what this team is the last couple of weeks, because that is their current situation playing without one of their best players.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction to make, is that whatever the year-to-date stuff is, when you lose a key player like that, and we talked about some of those in Monday's show in our Handicapping the Hardwood segment, everything changes. I mean, that stuff almost, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter completely, but when you're talking about a guy that, like Watson, the offense runs through him. So whatever offensive efficiency Creighton had before that, you completely have to adjust that now at this stage of the game. So I think that that's a really good example. What else have you noticed in terms of, you know, of market trends? Because like you said, the public's starting to get a lot more involved here. They just don't really have a whole lot of stuff going on. Do you notice that they are betting on teams that they know? Is it just because there's a number in front of that team's name on the line? What do you think it is?
Yeah, you're going to get that all the time. I mean, let's face it, the public's been betting football. They're coming into basketball. What are you going to do to start off? Well, you're going to back. I mean, look, the public's sharper. I'm not going to downgrade the public too much. I mean, they're definitely – it's a much sharper public than what it was, 10 years ago. I mean, just because of the access to the internet and great sites up there, you can get trends. And at the bottom barrel, you can get, hey, who are the best teams against the spread this season? I mean, you can look at teams like, UCLA was on a hot stretch. I guess, there are teams. I mean, you see Kentucky getting bet. You see UCLA last night against USC getting bet up there. They're looking at who's been very well against the spread. Although I'll say this, a team like UCLA, very hot against the spread early in the season, not so much here the last 7-8 games. Now I think there's been some point spread inflation on your name brand teams, and it's very easy to say, because I mean, we saw the other night, the number one, number two, number four team go down. We saw last night, top 10 teams like Florida State and UCLA go down. I look, you can call it coincidence because it's just one game. It's 1 week. But it's also the week where there's only one football game, and actually the football game is next weekend, not this weekend. I don't think it's a coincidence. Not only – and we've been talking college hoops here. I also don't think it's a coincidence that the NBA, if you're just betting underdogs on the money line this week, you're plus 36.77 units. I think there's a lot of name brand. I fell into the trap back in Cleveland last night, a very public pro team. I think that I've definitely seen it. We'll see as we move along towards next week. But, yes, the public is betting name brand teams, and obviously they're getting their teeth kicked in as far as this week is concerned.
So when you talk about that, what does it do in terms of market entry? Obviously market entry is different for the NBA and college basketball. I mean, in the NBA you have to sit there and wait and see who's actually going to play. In college, that's not necessarily the thing. I mean, if a guy's day-to-day, he may or may not play. You're not going to have too many surprises on college basketball. So are you being more patient from a market entry standpoint? Are you not playing as many overnights?
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. I think the overnights are really sharp. I mean, at least at a starting basis compared to my power ratings. I think the overnight ones are sharp. I mean, there's a few. I mean, look, Adam, when you're dealing with 50 to 60 games, I mean, there's going to be a couple numbers that are off. As far as pure, and even the overnights sometimes aren't taken into consideration, very recent player injuries. Like say a guy got banged up that particular game, man, maybe you're on top of it more than they are, particularly at the smaller conference level. But I got to be honest with you. I have found that and this is hardly ever the case, at least what I saw the first couple of weeks, I'm finding that the overnights are a lot more sharper than this is this week only, but I do think the public's gotten involved. I'm finding that they're a lot sharper than what the closing lines have been in a lot of these games. Another game I was on last night, I mean, Richmond was at home. The opening number was around 3. That got bet into like 5.5 or 6. I had a bad bet because I bet Richmond early on in that process. I think I had a 4.5 ticket. I didn't expect it to go any higher. And lo and behold, it did. There were some sixes that popped up. And, again, it was a home underdog. And, again, that's going to be my key here, a home underdog in a must-win situation. And they ended up beating it. And let's be also very honest, particularly with the NBA. This has been a recent 2-3 years, and it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. You can bet overnights as far as – getting the best number, but, you're also playing, you don't necessarily have the recent, and most up-to-date information. So I get it, the pros like to bet the overnights, but I have seen more and more often than not, and it's starting to trickle down in the college where guys are resting, they're maybe a little bit banged up, it's a long grind, and just player injuries. I mean, a guy from San Diego, I don't know if we can necessarily trust it. I've seen sites, this guy's upgraded to probable, and then within an hour or two, he's downgraded to doubtful. So be very wary of putting all your bankroll into the overnights. I think, leave a little bit of it. I would say 50-50, leave a little bit of it and play against some of the closing numbers.
Well, I want to throw a bone to our listeners here. We haven't had too many exclusive free picks from you here because we've just had bowl season and then the NFL playoffs and all that where you we broke down the games and you certainly – shed some light on which side that you preferred, but you got a play here tonight for Thursday night in college basketball that our listeners can hopefully cash in on?
Yeah, this would be a public play, but you know what? I just don't understand the line here. We're going to go with way out to the Big West and take game number 7-4-8. We'll land with UC Irvine minus 11.5. And the reason being here is let's just take a look at simple line value here. You know, these two teams met just about a week ago. UC Irvine's laying 7. And won the game 70-48. Now, a little bit misleading because Cal Poly only shot 24% from the field in that one. But, I mean, if you just do home and away, and usually for most, you know, home court advantages, you give about 4.5 points in college hoops. So just on that basis alone, minus 7 on the road, do the 9-point swing there, should be laying 16. Now, they also have some key technical advantages. Again, this is a free pick, not a premium pick for me, but you look at Irvine recently. I mean, it's a team that's hot. They won 8 in a row. They're also been a covering machine in conference play the last 3 years. You look at them 29-14 against the spread in the month of January, 16-6 against the number. Then you throw in the fact that Cal Poly's road dog, 0-6, when they're a big road dog, when they're 12 points or more. And they've been a terrible team in conference play the last couple of years, 12-27 against the number. Add it all up. And, you know, obviously you do have a questionable hamstring here for Luke Nelson for UC Irvine, which is probably why the line's down a little bit. But whether he plays or not, I'm going to roll late and play it. Give me Irvine minus the points.
Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over there at the website right now, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for the Super Bowl, that issue will be out. It'll be $10. You'll have my exclusive Super Bowl pick on both sides in total for the Powers Picks newsletter. That'll come out next Wednesday. We'll also break down all the different props and also have some key Super Bowl betting articles on just breaking it down, how much the handle is, how well the Super Bowl, the books do in the Super Bowl. So we'll have all that next week's issue, which will be available for just $10. Now, if you're looking to sign up for next season, lowest price offered, you'll see $79. Again, it's a football newsletter. It covers you from not only the college side of things, but also the NFL side of things. That's a $79 price for the upcoming season. Also, you know, if you're looking for the college hoops side, and keep in mind, it is a daily grind as far as the college basketball hoops. You want every single star-rated pick that I release, whether it's game of the month, game of the year, all the way through the national championship game, all the way through that first weekend in April there. That's $239. It'll cover you every single day of college hoops. That's VIP service, not necessarily a newsletter. So you can also check that out at BradPowersSports.com.
You can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, thank you so much for your time, man. As always, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
All right. Sounds good, Adam. Take care, my friend.
Great stuff there with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. We'll keep that college basketball theme rolling here because we've got another really strong guest joining us on today's broadcast. That is Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Great, Adam. Thanks for having me on. It's great listening to you and Brad talk college basketball.
Well, it's always great listening to Brad, isn't it? I know you have to do a lot more of it than I do, so I'm kind of surprised you're not tired of him already.
Yeah, that's all right. He makes sense most of the time, so, you know, give him a few beers if things change, but, you know, all good.
All right, something I want to ask you about here before we get into college basketball, which is what we usually talk about on this segment. I talked about this a little bit with Brad early in his segment. For our listeners that may be coming out there to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, I'm going to try and crowdsource some opinions from our handicappers here on the show that are Vegas residents with some of their do's and don'ts, maybe some good places to grab some eats, that type of thing. But Ralph, for you, if you're somebody coming into town here for the Super Bowl, where would you hope to watch the game?
You know, it's changed over the last few years, and, you know, Super Bowl parties have always been huge. Those are invited events where you have your ticket and you're getting free food and beverage. But what has become super popular the last few years are public Super Bowl parties, and they're ranging up $75 to $100. But, you know, a good friend of mine did some articles for a few places, and they're at 85% sold out. Now, I'm going to go back to the old days, and I remembered having so much fun watching the Super Bowl. If you're going to invest 2 to 3 hours of your life, it's worth getting to a great sports book early, let's say Caesars, let's say, you know, the Mirage, you know, or you can go, of course, to, you know, the old Hilton, the old Las Vegas Hilton, the Westgate, and invest 2 or 3 hours, get there early, bet the basketball games that are on before, get yourself a couple seats, and just have a great time. If you get there an hour before, you're not going to get a seat. You're going to be watching. You're going to be standing. You're going to be walking. But if you got a few hours, do that. Get there early. Take the newspaper. Bet the basketball game. Start looking at all the props you want. Play them there. I think that's the best, most fun thing to do. You just watch every emotion change on a play. You know, first touchdown, the place goes either crazy or nuts, depending on who scored it. Heck, even the coin flip. Again, a ridiculous bet, but people bet it. So there's so much emotion and raw emotion from all those people betting anything from a few dollars per bet to perhaps a few thousand, but it's a great way to spend the day.
Ralph, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second. I know you moved out to Vegas within the last couple of years, but certainly, you know, being in this industry, you've been out there a lot throughout your lifetime. Do you have a memorable Super Bowl story from a time that you've been out there in the past?
You know, I haven't. You know, I learned early on that, you know, the Super Bowl is great for entertaining, but it's not where you're going to make your money. You know, be responsible, do the smart thing. You know, how many times have I heard from, you know, customers from my previous employers, their Super Bowl was the biggest bet. They bet more. They're in trouble because they have such a huge bet. It was a stressful game. They, you know, they got sick watching it because they played so much on it. I haven't. I've learned again early on, be conservative, have fun, make your few bets that you may make a few bucks on, but by no means should it be your biggest bet or anywhere near that. There's more information on this game than any other game. Save it to when there's value. You're looking at college basketball the day before. There's 100-some games. Is there more value on betting a Horizon game or the Super Bowl? And then make your decision.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, and something we can talk about here a little bit is next week. I mean, sportsbooks are going to have all their props out, but they also know that their clientele is going to be more worried about Super Bowl 51, looking for those prop values, betting first touchdown, MVP, defensive score, over under yards, all those types of things. Do you feel like, you know, that maybe because there's a little bit less attention paid to the other markets that, you know, maybe next week is one of the better ones to try and grab some value?
Well, you know, I think the props are pretty much done. I you know, the couple sportsbook guys I talked to, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, those things are usually done. So, you know, I think there's more value always with college basketball because of the sheer number of games and the teams people are betting on are obscure. But I don't think there's more value this week. I think there's more value when football's going on. But with Super Bowl now, for sportsbook guys, it's done. I mean, today, you know, if you're listening to this on Thursday, their props are, they may not be up. They may be waiting to see what the market puts them up at, but they know what they're going to have. They're up. They're done handicapping. Now it's just the easy part, watching their money come in.
Well, I want to ask you about some of the same things I asked Brad about and just get different opinions, because what I love about this show is it's all about the different perspectives. There are a lot of different ways to handicap. There's no right way or wrong way. It's just a matter of finding a way that works for you. So had a chat with him about market entry. I think you called in about the tail end of that. So I just want to ask you about it. I know we've talked about it in the past here a little bit, but market entry times change throughout the season based on what's going on. You're not always going to hit the overnights. You're not always going to bet right before the game. You're not always going to bet, you know, in the morning of the day of the game. So how have you made some adjustments to your market entry here based on, you know, what's been happening in the college basketball betting landscape?
Well, if I happen to like a top-rated AT team, I try to bet it early. That's where the public money is going to come in. You know, after now that we've talked about the transition of football, people are going to bet teams they know. People are going to bet ranked teams, especially when they get them at a low number. So if I'm going to take a popular team, a well-known team, and I like that side, I'm going to play it early. If I'm playing against those teams, if I'm playing a dog of over 7 points or more, I'm usually going to wait because I'm going to get more value. And the same thing, you know, the common tendency, now college totals aren't nearly what college football are when we're talking college hoops, but they do tend to go towards the over. So if I'm playing an over, I think about playing it early. When I'm playing an under, I usually don't mind waiting.
Well, I think another nice thing about that, too, is maybe if you do get caught, with your hand in the cookie jar a little bit. Also, taking that approach can allow you to buy back and maybe just drink the juice if you can shop around for a similar price point. So you know, that you also give yourself a couple more advantages. I mean, it's sort of an early bird gets the worm type of thing in the sense that, you know, you're not hamstrung with a bad number.
Well, you have to have a number in your head, and you know, you set the number where you're going to want it. You know, if I have a game in my mind, I'm going to say, I'm going to play this up to five. And if I see the game at three, there's absolutely no reason for me not to play it because I'm getting 2 points of value of my number in my head. So, you know, if it goes to, you know, if it climbs a point, am I upset? No, because it's within my range. So you have the play in your head. You've got to be comfortable with the number you're handicapping. And if you find a number within that range, don't play the what-if game. You'll kill yourself. Be happy you got the number in the game. It's a strong play, and I usually stick with my number. If it moves a point or two, but it's still in my range, I'm certainly not going to buy it back, try to middle it, or lose juice because I'm splitting out on it. I'm going to stick with that number. I'm going to be confident. I'm happy with where I am at that number, and I'm just going to play it and look on.
There are a couple of games I want to talk about tonight, and obviously for our listeners, if you listen to this show late on the day of the show, you know you won't be able to take advantage of these games, but I still think that these topics are going to be relevant for you as we go throughout the season here, so that's why I picked these two games off the odds screen. And the first one is 7 o'clock, the crosstown shootout between Xavier and Cincinnati. This is a big, big, big rivalry game, even though these two teams are not in the same conference. And what's interesting to me is you've got Cincinnati, the home favorite. They're the higher-ranked team, but they play in the weaker conference. Everybody knows the Big East is very strong. When I look at this game and when I look at the line movement, and maybe you have something different in mind here, and if you do, certainly let me know. But when I look at this one, it sort of looks to me like people are just betting with Big East bias to take the underdog in the better conference.
Well, I actually favor the Bearcats in this just because they're the better defensive team. But you've got to remember, Xavier is a team that has been ranked, that is, you know, they're on TV much more often with the Big East flavor. And Cincinnati, I can agree with you. You know, I think the American gets shied. I mean, it does in football. It does in hoops. And I think that's an excellent point that you are looking, that it's a popular team. Now, you know, you look at Xavier. I mean, Xavier has lost 3 of their 4 games. But look at who they played. They played at Villanova, at Butler, and against Creighton. So, you know, those 3 losses, and now they're coming over a win against Georgetown. So, to me, I like there's still the home edge is very split in this game. Obviously, if you've never been to a Cincinnati Xavier game, I'll tell you what, it's not quite North Carolina Duke, but it is great in the River City, and I'll take the better defensive team in that situation.
So in terms of looking at a game like this, where you've got two top 25 teams, and like I talked about in the previous segment, people that are just now getting into college basketball are looking for those teams that have a number in front of them. So this is kind of one of those market entry examples where, you know, you do lean to Cincinnati, you do lean with the better defensive team. Is this sharp money you feel like coming in on Xavier, or is this more of a publicly driven move? Because as we talked about, they're in the more publicized conference, and they're a team that, you know, has also made noise in the NCAA tournament more recently than Cincinnati has.
Well, I think, you know, I think number one, it's on TV. Number two, I truly believe this, that Joe Public looks at those games at the top of the schedule. This game, it may seem silly to say, but this game is number one on the rotation. Those added games are at the bottom of the schedule. I think people look at the top of the schedule, see those games that they know, and they react to them. Now, that's a very public play, but I think that's part of what drives those early games into line moves.
Well, that's a really interesting point to make, because not only is this one at the top of the rotation number, it's also at the top in terms of tip-off time. So it's really up there at the top, and that's something you don't really think about. And I completely agree with what you're saying there, and also you factor in, you know, it is the only matchup of two top 25 teams tonight. So certainly that one's going to get the draw. But You know, these are things that you want to look for from a market entry standpoint, is you want to be able to read these context clues, you know, and look at everything that goes into a line. And the other game that I want to mention here, we'll go down to the ACC, North Carolina and Virginia Tech. Here's another one where North Carolina opened a 14-point favorite. It's up to 15. Some places already showing 15.5. And regardless of what side you may personally be looking at here, Ralph, or any of our listeners, this is one of those examples of heavy public team getting money. If you like them, you take them right away. If you don't, you wait on it.
And it is. And, you know, this game's unique because, you know, ACC normally plays Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday, you know, and Sunday. And they've spread it out now. They have a game every game this week. This is the only ACC game. You've got North Carolina. You know, you're looking at a team that is 9-0 at home. They've covered the spread 9 of 12 games. You know, Virginia Tech on the road, you know, we talked about it. Virginia Tech was a team I liked early on. You know, they're 3-2 as a dog. More importantly for me, they're 3-2 straight up as a dog, meaning they can pull some upsets. You know, North Carolina has Miami on deck on Saturday. You want to take a look at that. Virginia Tech's got a game they're going to win on Saturday hosting Boston College. So, you know, I'm going to go then and look at where my efficiency ratings are. You know, North Carolina, top 10 offense and defense. They're playing very well now. They're number 8 offense, number 10 defense. Virginia Tech, middle of the road, 51-60. But they're still a top 50 team for me. You know, my power ratings in this game have North Carolina 10.7 plus the home edge. So it's pretty close to where my numbers are. It's not a game I'm going to play. But I completely agree with you. As we get closer to tip-off time, I even if there is sharp money, I think the public money will draw this up another point. We'll see what happens next week. I'm going to say the line climbs one more point.
Well, and again, that's something that our listeners want to be aware of here looking at the college basketball market, especially for those that haven't been able to follow it as closely. You know, maybe you don't know the personnel. Maybe you haven't been paying too much attention to what teams have done in their marquee spots, you know, what a team like Virginia Tech has done against the upper echelon of the ACC. But, you know, if you can make these determinations with where these lines are going to go, you know, you're either going to keep yourself off of some games or you're going to get yourself in a position where you get good line value. And, you know, Ralph, you know this as much as anybody. Over the long term, if you're getting good line value, you're going to win more often than not.
Well, you go back, and I think it's important to do this. I don't think enough people go back and look at the work they did. Now, you know, I'm basically putting down numbers for every game. I'm going through situations. I'm putting my check marks in. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing I'm inserting into a computer. My computer gives me my numbers. But then at the end, I'm old school. I like writing stuff down. I like giving the check marks. I like doing those kind of things. Now, I think it's as important for you to go back every day to your previous day's work. Look at where you made the number. Look at where the final scores were. Look at where those lines were when you decided your plays, and look at where they closed. And learn from what you did or didn't do as much as what you are moving forward. You know, I find there's more value in anything in that. Why did I leave this game off? What was the final score? What was the determining factor that I didn't use the game as much as those games you use? So, the work you did is important. Make sure you follow up on it from the previous night.
There's something I want to ask you about that Brad mentioned, because I've heard from Sports Cheetah, a guy that you're familiar with, that, you know, he looks at the closing line and puts a lot of emphasis on that because that's the sharpest line, because that's where the market wound up putting it. It's not where the odds makers put it. It's where the bookmakers had to adjust it based on the money and the action that they were getting. Now, Brad said in the previous segment that as he's been looking at college basketball here over the last week or so, the overnights have been sharper in his mind than the closing numbers, because we've seen some interesting betting action, a decent amount of it publicly driven, of course. I just want to get your opinion on that whole thing in terms of, you know, evaluating openers versus the closing line, and if you think that there have been, you know, some anomalies here this week.
Well, I'm going to take the comparison and I'm going to use it for both college basketball and college football, and I'm going to disagree with a great handicapper, the Sports Cheetah, a little bit. When I'm looking at my lines and I'm looking at lines throughout the day, I basically want to use the line that the majority of people bet the game at. Now, for 7 o'clock games, yes, that means it's close to the closer. But when you have West Coast games, how often do we see the next morning? You know, example, that UCLA game got driven up last night. Did the majority of people play it at that closing number? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say the majority of people played it at that 6:30, 6 o'clock Eastern time. You know, with East Coast money, there's still a lot of East Coast money involved in these games. So I look at where the majority of people played it, and I think the number around 6 or 7 o'clock is what I look at. Now, obviously, some games move later, some games move earlier, but you know, again, we've seen many, and football's a little easier to for a lot of our listeners, I'm sure, to pay attention to. There's times you see a Hawaii game move 3-4 points because a couple people played it at light. It's the only game. They're trying to play catch-up, so I'm not going to use that closing number in a Hawaii game or a late game that got steamed, an Arizona game that went up 4 points because some late information and everyone fell on it. I like looking at what the majority is, and I think that's between at 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern range when the majority of bets are taking place.
You know, I think that's a really, really interesting distinction to make because a lot of times those late games can be skewed by public money chasing losses from earlier in the day.
There's no question. And again, more so in football, you see it because there's only one game or there's a late game on FS1, you know, a Pac-12 game that got moved to a 10:30 or 11 o'clock kickoff or, you know, a Mountain West game. So I look at when the numbers move. I look at when most casinos had the number. And then you just make your own judgment. So again, there's no science to taking a number down. But in my mind, I always try to use a number where I feel the majority of people can bet the game or got the game at.
One other thing I want to ask you about, and then we'll get sort of into some of your situational and technical games of the week here. And by the way, I want to give you mad props for that call of Arizona over UCLA over the weekend. That was a brilliant, brilliant call by you. And also, great job getting in on that Arizona future before the number adjusted with that UCLA upside. That was a really, really sharp call by you. But speaking of that, with some of these recent upsets, have you noticed adjustments in the line, either for the home dog, you know, maybe they're shading the favorite down a little bit because they're trying to protect against, you know, what we've seen. I mean, recency bias plays into this thing all the time. So if we get a bunch of top 10, top 15 upsets, people are going to start playing on them just because, you know, well, they're happening and they're going to keep happening. And it's not really a whole lot of predictive value in that necessarily. But have you noticed adjustments in that regard?
Well, you know, I think a team that I've talked about a lot and a team, you know, I like very much so is Florida State. You know, Florida State just went through a gauntlet. They played 7 top 40 teams. They were just off Duke, North Carolina, Notre Dame, and Louisville, and they were laying 10.5 last night at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech was one of my plays. Again, I'm not afraid to play against Florida State, a team I've talked about quite a bit. But, yes, people watched Florida State upset, or not upset, but play Notre Dame and win. People saw Florida State play Louisville and win. I think they were in a horrible situation. The line became inflated on them. Georgia Tech's a team that already upset North Carolina at his home as a double-digit dog. They already upset Clemson at home as almost a double-digit dog, and they did so again last night. So, yes, those popular top-ranked teams that are on national TV week in and week out, the lines certainly have been come inflated, and I certainly look to play against them. Now, it's not always the case. I'll tell you what, let me jump ahead here, and this is a game on Sunday. I think, you know, Villanova, you have the national champion. You have the 18 number one team, you know, and the whole world saw them lose. Now, they're hosting Virginia on Sunday. I actually like Virginia. I think Villanova goes down 2 straight times. I'm not going to look to play against them. I'm going to take the value of the whole world lining up on Villanova off a loss at home against this Virginia team, which can only score in the 60s. I like Virginia, again, to pull that upset on Sunday. So while we talk about playing off a loss and while we think there's value, there's times when you line up and play against them again, and that's one of the times I'll be looking at this weekend.
Well, and that was a follow-up question asking if the team that lost gets an inflated number in that following game, because everyone just automatically assumes that a bounce back is coming. And maybe the upset happened for a much bigger reason than simple variance or a one-off game. And maybe there's something that just isn't working. Maybe one of those really good teams has been able to overcome one of the problems that they've had, and then it just catches up with them. So I do want to ask you about this Florida State-Syracuse game here coming up on Saturday. Not an ideal spot for Florida State to go up to the Carrier Dome, have to shoot over this Boeheim zone. But you have to think that people are going to look at what happened to Florida State. I mean, they got outscored 41-15 in the first half of that Georgia Tech game. Pretty even game from that point on, but Georgia Tech was just in cruise control. I have to think that segments of the public betting market will play Florida State at any number here because they just automatically expect that bounce back.
Well, you know, you've got to look, and I'm actually going to go and look at the other side of that game here in a minute, but did Florida State lose because they were tired? Did Florida State lose because they were banged up? Did Florida State lose because Georgia Tech played incredible? Or did Florida State just lose because they played poorly? I think Florida State was a tired, emotionally drained team that only shot 28% of hit 28% of their field goals, 24% of their three-pointers, and 62% of their free throws. So I think Florida State gets a bounce back. Now, the difference in this game is I have Florida State about 6.5 points better than Syracuse. So if I'm going to be laying 2 or 3, I'm not going to make an adjustment for them because they're off a loss. This is the ACC. You've got six teams rated in the top 17. That's in the AP poll. You've probably got a two or three more teams realistically in the top 30 of the poll. It's just a brutal, brutal conference, and playing on the road is never easy, especially when you're going to the Carrier Dome, playing with those sight lines. You know, Syracuse defense works for a couple reasons, because they're very good at it. They play a unique defense, and also because they play in the dome, and jump shooting teams like that sometimes struggle in the dome. Now, you know, I expect Florida State to get a win, but again, I'm not going to overlay. You know, if it's in that, you know, 3-4 range, which I don't think it will be, then I'll go ahead and back them. But I think this is a time to lay off an inflated team because you shot the ball poorly and because you're going into another situation that's very difficult to make those long jump shots.
Well, let's get into your technical and situational games of the week here, and I'll let you decide which one you want to start with.
Well, you know what? I'm going to look at a situational play, and it's Notre Dame over the Georgia Tech team we just talked about. Again, I was on Georgia Tech last night, very happy they won that game. But now Notre Dame is 17-3. They're off their first home loss. On the road, they're 4-0 straight up in ATS. Again, that's very important. When you're going on the road, you always look at ATS numbers, but look at those straight up numbers. Can this team win outright on the road? You know, Georgia Tech off that big upset. Now they're playing again in another game. You know, I take them down a notch. I actually, when you're off an upset, I actually take them down about a point in my power ratings because they're an 11. They're now a 12-18 after that win, and you know they're getting outscored on the year prior to last game, and now you're ready for a different type of offense. Notre Dame's offense is my number 6 offense. They have a faster pace than Florida State. Winning a game is draining. Emotional wins are draining. And now I think it's a great spot for Notre Dame to come in and take the win away.
You know, I think it's interesting, too, because you talk about this Georgia Tech team, and obviously under Brian Gregory, they just couldn't figure things out. But they seem to be doing pretty well here under Josh Pastner, especially in the defensive end. But programs like this have to learn how to sustain success. Look at what happened after they beat North Carolina. Now, they had to go on the road to Duke, which is no picnic, obviously, at Cameron Indoor. But they lost 110-57. And look, Duke's a quality team. Georgia Tech's still trying to make its way to that level. But I think that sort of illustrates the point I'm talking about in terms of, you know, sustaining success is really, really hard to do. You can have, on any given night, anybody in college basketball can beat anybody just based on the circumstances. But doing it multiple times in a row is much, much more challenging.
Well, you look at Georgia Tech's schedule. I just pulled that up as you were talking. They started the year 2 wins, then they had a loss. Then they had 2 wins, then they had 2 losses. Then they had 2 wins, then they had 1 loss. then they had three wins, two losses, and now one win. So their longest streak the entire year was three wins, and two of those wins were Wofford and North Carolina AT&T, so two poor teams. So, again, winning is difficult. You see these teams, and this is most of the ACC. These are most of the mid-major conferences. These are most of the teams that are in the middle of the Big 12 and Big 10. You get your stretches where you're going to win and lose. Most of the time, those are home wins, but you got to find the right situations for these teams, because it's not just as easy as, I'm going to play on them at home, I'm going to play against them on the road, and I'm going to play, you know, off a loss, I'm going to play on them. So even a team like Georgia Tech with three big upsets now, you know, they're also in a situation where another home game at Notre Dame, you know, and there'll be another number dog, and you got to look at where it is in the season, because as the season progresses, those wins are harder to come by, and the surprise factor is not there. All of a sudden now, Georgia Tech, without that win last night, may have not been on Notre Dame's radar, but those Notre Dame kids now know that score, and that puts more of a bullseye on your back, even when you're an underdog.
That's an excellent point, because you get one of those big wins and then the next team on deck realizes, hey, we can't overlook these guys. So that's a really, really good point that you just made there, Ralph. How about your technical game of the week? What are you looking at for that one?
I'm going way out west. You know, I'm going to go out to Hawaii. Cal Santa Barbara is traveling to Hawaii. Now, Hawaii is off a loss last night. They don't get many home games. That was only their fourth home game. They have a home game on Thursday and a home game on Saturday. Now, I love playing against teams that can't win on the road. UC Santa Barbara is 0-9 straight up. Now, if you get into a close game and you know you haven't won on the road, that can be mentally draining. They're 3-6 ATS. Hawaii, again, not many home games. When they do get this stretch where they're playing three straight home games, they need to be focused. They already lost the first. They should win the second. They're going to be about a 6-point favorite on Thursday, and then I expect them to win handily, play against, again, a UC Barber team that is 0-9 straight up on the road, and will only be getting about 6 or 7 points in the situation.
A lot of excellent thoughts on today's show from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what's going on over there at the website right now?
You know what, daily plays at WagerTalk.com. If anyone is interested in a free day of service, shoot me an email. I'll email you out my entire card for free on Saturday. It'll have all of my games, complete write-ups on those games. CalSports@AOL.com. Again, daily plays at WagerTalk.com. And Twitter at CalSportsLV.
One other thing I want to make sure that we mention here, that college basketball guide that you send out on Tuesdays.
You know, it's up. It's available for free. You don't even need to register. You just need to go to wagertalk.com. You're going to see it right on the top, or click on my page. We talk about records. Now, I have them listed in conference order, and the reason is you and Brad touched on this. It's not year-to-date records anymore. You know, while a team is 14-7, let's say like Houston, they're 4-4 in the American Conference. So, you know, that 10-3 start that they had is out the window. So you look at current rankings. I've got my power rankings, offense and defense efficiency, strength of schedule, and again, all the categories for ATS and straight up and all their line games, home, road, favorite, and dog.
Well, again, Ralph Michaels, make sure you head on over to wagertalk.com and check that out. Ralph, thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you again next week, man.
Adam, 2019. I just got the wire that the Indians are going to host the All-Star game. Can I have your tickets?
Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to talk about it. You can have it for the Home Run Derby. I don't think I'm going to go to that. The Home Run Derby is just kind of a circus, so I don't think I'm going to do that.
Have a great week.
All right. Thanks, Ralph. There you go. Ralph Michaels of wagertalk.com. Yeah, I probably will have tickets for the All-Star game. Who knows if I'll actually go or not, but still pretty cool. I mean, for those of you that haven't been to Progressive Field in Cleveland, what a beautiful facility. I understand that I'm biased, but they've put significant money into renovations here lately, and now it seems like some of those make a little bit more sense with the All-Star game coming to town. But if you've never been here, you know, Cleveland gets a really bad rap from people that haven't been here in 15, 20 years. It's a much, much different area now. If you get the chance to come, you absolutely should. You know, you got Cedar Point about an hour away for the kids. You've got a couple of great sports facilities. They're putting a ton of money into Quicken Loans Arena, which, you know, we can talk about taxpayer investment in sports venues. That's a topic for another show, but a lot of that going to be put into Quicken Loans Arena. But, you know, definitely an up-and-coming area, and certainly excited about that All-Star game. A couple of things I want to mention here before we bring Jay Primetime of MMA Oddsbreaker onto the show. It's been a while since we've talked to Jay, so that'll be exciting. DSI Sportsbook. Our Bang the Book radio listeners know that they can get a $10 free bet just for signing up and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus using the promo code BTB Radio. Again, I talk about this all the time with props and all the different sporting events going on right now. Want to make sure you're out there shopping for the best of the number. And actually, for our Bang the Book radio listeners, there's something I want to bring to your attention here. It's not a hidden part of the website necessarily, but in the sports drop-down menu, if you go to the sports betting section, I guess we'll call it, and go over into articles, there's a lot of how-to stuff in there. And I talk about several different things. This is just some of the headlines here. What are rotation numbers in sports betting? What is sharp money? What is public money? How to read the sports market? That's the one I want to key in on here, because I talked in that reading the sports betting market article about, you know, something that we've kind of been discussing a little bit more here on the shows recently is when you're looking at an odds screen, you try to understand the clientele at that particular sports book, you know, because you want to look at these things in terms of who is betting what. You know, some sports books out there are much, much sharper than other ones. It's just the nature of the beast. Not all clientels are created equally. You know, and of course, there are some that cater more to sharp players, some that cater more to public players, some that have a big difference of opinions there. But I talked about that in this reading the sports betting market article, and that's what I talk about in terms of shopping around for the best prices. You know, DSI Sportsbook has a pretty split base, I would say, in terms of public and sharp players. I would say maybe it's even a little bit more public than something like Bookmaker, you know, who falls under the same umbrella with the Chris family of sportsbooks. So if you're looking to play underdogs and unders, you know, you're going to find better numbers at those more public books. If you want to play favorites, you play at some of the sharper books or some of the ones that have a bigger split, because some of the sharper books out there are like the Greek and Pinnacle, which don't cater to U.S. players anymore. They've grandfathered in the players that had accounts before they stopped allowing U.S. players. And of course, those are some of the sharper guys here in the U.S. market. But you have to be able to do that. There are so many things. I don't think a whole lot of people realize this, and I'll probably end up going down a rabbit hole about this. I don't think a whole lot of people realize how difficult betting on sports is. Now, if you're a listener of this show, you certainly do, because we talk about it all the time, and you've probably picked up on a lot of things here from our guests. But I imagine each and every one of you out there listening to this show has some friend that watches a lot of sports and thinks, oh, I could do that. I could do that. It's not just about breaking down matchups. It's not just about picking games. It's about everything. It's about understanding line values. It's about using the market to your advantage. It's about when to get in on the market. Just so many more things that go into it other than just picking the winner of a game or picking the team to cover the spread. There are a lot of other things that you have to keep in mind. You have to know when you're going to get the best prices, how to maximize your investments, which sports betting outlets you want to be at. All of this stuff is so, so important. So, you know, it's more than just trying to pick a winner, as all of our listeners know. But whenever you can, try to convey that to your friends. I think that this is just really easy, and scoff at the notion of people hitting 54 and 55% because it's not easy. And for those of you that do this on a daily basis, and for those of you that listen to this show on a daily basis, you are fully aware of that. One more segment to go here on this Thursday mega show of Bang the Book Radio. Good to bring Jay Primetime of MMA Oddsbreaker back on the telecast. We haven't had him on for quite some time here. Jay, how's it going, man?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to be back. How you doing, Adam? I think this is the first time we've talked in the new year, so happy new year, and you know, glad to be back on and talking fights.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Happy new year to you and yours as well. And I just realized I called this a telecast, as if people can actually see us with us talking here. But in any event, we've got this UFC on Fox coming up here this weekend. I like to ask you this in a general sense here. Your overall impressions of the card, how does it look?
It's a pretty good card. There's definitely some compelling bouts on this card, both on the main card and the prelims. Is there one fight that, you know, like a world beater kind of a thing? I'm going to say probably not. but there is a number one contender fight and some, you know, some top 10 matchups, that type of thing. So, you know, in terms of importance, it's pretty decent. Maybe not up to the caliber of some of the, when that deal first started, when they're putting title fights on main Fox. You know, I think the UFC is about 1 year left, maybe a little less than a year left on their Fox contract, which is pretty interesting. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next several months in terms of the caliber of fights they put on Fox. You know, I guess we'll be able to tell kind of how they feel those negotiations will go, if they'll expand it to, you know, other media outlets beyond Fox for the media rights. And, you know, we can probably tell a little bit based on these on the card offering what they're planning to do. So definitely an interesting time.
Well, and let's talk a little bit here about what we can expect in 2017 as a whole, because I remember we were sort of discussing this a little bit last year heading into the new year, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the plan was to sort of have fewer events but stronger cards, right?
That was definitely a discussion point, especially when the, you know, there were some papers that were leaked, you know, some reports that were leaked when WME bought out Zuffa, I guess, in terms of figuring out the evaluation and just a strategy that there would be, you know, fewer events overall. Originally, they had scheduled 11 events, I believe, in the quarter, so that was kind of on par with what they had done last year. I actually think it was one additional event, but there was a pay-per-view originally scheduled in January. That was already postponed, so they postponed that one to August, I believe, and there was a fight night event scheduled in March, and that event was scrapped. So now we're down to 9 events for the first quarter 2017. So if they do 9 events a quarter, that's 36 events, which I think is about 5 less than what they did last year. So maybe we'll see less events, but honestly, I don't know. I mean, they could be doing something pretty similar. It wouldn't surprise me in terms of the event structure. I think we all, though, kind of knew that the first month or two overall was going to be the events weren't going to be as jam-packed because the UFC obviously put a focus on November and December, especially that big UFC 205 card, and then the Rousey card, you know, right before the new year, as well as, you know, some of the other events, the Fox event, in the later part of fourth quarter. So they had a lot of their top fighters fighting in fourth quarter, and it's kind of hard to turn those guys around or girls in the first, you know, just on a month or two of rest. You know, obviously some could have injuries, some need to have minor surgery, some just want to rest during the holidays, and, you know, what have you. So it was always going to be kind of a light schedule the first 6-7 weeks of the year, but it's definitely heating up. The March pay-per-view looks really strong with 2 title fights. They've already booked the one in April. There's going to be Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Johnson for the light heavyweight title, so a pretty highly anticipated rematch there. And then in May, they're doing another pay-per-view in Dallas, and that's going to be the heavyweight title fight between Junior Dos Santos and Stipe Miocic. So as you can see, first couple months light, and then, you know, these pay-per-views being booked March, April, May already have highly anticipated fights. So I think the schedule is going to pick up.
Well, before we get into the specific matchups for this card here, I want to mention the location of this card. It's at the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado. So we're talking about high altitude. How does that affect your handicapping for a card like this?
Yeah, it definitely comes into play in a couple of fights. There's definitely an advantage to training at altitude, you know, anticipating this. There's certainly fighters who have gone out of their way to train at altitude, whether it's in Denver training with, you know, affiliate camps or other high altitude locations. Another place, you know, in the past that I know fighters have trained is Big Bear in California. That's been a popular location for altitude as well, in addition to Denver. I mean, I guess you're a little more limited in the winter time because just, you know, not everybody wants to train, you know, in the dead of winter at altitude. I mean, really, what can you do if there's significant snow on the ground, you know, in terms of outdoor training, doing running, cardio, that type of thing at altitude. So, you know, that definitely comes into play. But, yeah, I would say there's probably a couple fights on this card where altitude, I think, can be a factor.
I don't know what you mean about training in winter. I always just kind of thought everyone did it like Rocky in Rocky IV and just kind of, you know, went and trudged through the snow.
Hard to run outside when the snow's up to your waist.
All right, let's get into this card here a little bit. We'll begin with the main event, actually, and then we'll work our way on down. Juliana Pena, Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko a minus 120 favorite here. And, you know, in the women's bantamweight division, you know, which one of these two fighters is the stronger one in your mind, and who has the matchup advantage here?
Yeah, this is where I think this is interesting. You know, just for those that aren't familiar, this is the number one contender bout in this weight class. I think they're ranked 1 and 2. Or 1 and 3, rather, in the rankings behind Amanda Nunez. So it's a pretty clear fight that they're building for the winner to face potentially Amanda Nunez for that championship. So, you know, a pivotal fight, main event. And it's interesting because I think, you know, heading to this fight, I really like Shevchenko. I really liked how she fought. She fought her last fight was against Holly Holm in the main event of a previous Fox card, and she kind of, you know, picked apart, you know, a former world champion, you know, on the feet, which was pretty impressive, no doubt. But this is a much different kind of matchup because Holly Holm was no threat for takedowns. She's a stand-up fighter. She's a boxer. And Pena is like the complete opposite. She's a wrestler first and foremost. She takes her opponents down. She's beaten quality opposition previously, like Jessica Ai, like former title contender Kat Zingano. And she clearly won those fights. So this is where this really gets tricky because I think overall, I think Shevchenko is, you know, the more likely fighter to beat Amanda Nunez. They previously fought about a year ago now. Shevchenko got taken down in the first two rounds and, you know, really took over in the third round, but it was like a little too late to win a decision. I think if that happens again, I think it would be a 5-round fight, and I think Shevchenko would win. But Pena is going to be working takedowns, you know, throughout this fight. I really don't see Shevchenko being able to stuff these takedowns with regularity. And the difference between Pena and Nunez is that Pena's conditioning is a lot higher. You know, she's done some training at altitude as well. And, you know, her conditioning overall is just, you know, vastly superior to, say, like Amanda Nunez. So I don't see a situation where Pena's going to be slowing down late in the fight to score a takedown. So I think Pena is going to win this fight probably by decision. I think there's just going to be too much time in top control where she's going to have a big advantage. And pretty much 95-98% of the time, if you're in top control, you're going to win rounds, and ultimately you're going to win the fight. So I definitely you know, favor Pena in this bout from that perspective. But we haven't seen her go 5 rounds before, so that definitely is a little bit of a – you're kind of taking a leap of faith in Pena to, you know, to carry that conditioning over 5 rounds. But, I mean, I kind of lean towards her doing that. So I'm going to say Pena wins this bout by decision.
Well, and of course, we'll have to see with Pena up there in the altitude. You know, maybe that could be something that becomes a factor. So is this – does this have potential then for being a good fight from a live betting standpoint?
Yeah, I would say so. Probably more so value in the live line than the pre-line because, I mean, there is the possibility that Shevchenko, you know, is able to stuff Pena's takedowns and then you'd be able to see that early and bet that way, or Pena's going to have a lot of success scoring the takedowns and her not slowing down. So there could be a chance to do that. Kind of controls the fight early. It's going to be hard to get a good price on her after the second or third round. So This is a little bit of a tricky one. And like I said, because, you know, Shevchenko, I think, would be the better, the more likely fighter to beat the champion. But because of this matchup, though, and the way it works out, I think Pena is the more likely winner to even get. Because, you know, I think if the Pena Nunez fight happens, I think Nunez will be able to stop the takedown early. And I think Pena is going to have real problems on the feet with Nunez's power, I think. Would actually knock her out. So that's just kind of my thought process on that little, you know, three fighter circle.
Well, let's look at this welterweight fight here. Donald Cerrone minus 150 favorite against Jorge Masvidal. Vidal plus 130 on the comeback there. Seems like this should be a pretty good fight, at least on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people agree this is probably the best fight on the card in terms of an entertainment perspective. Both fighters are pretty entertaining and seems, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, an easy thing to say. But Donald Cerrone is never in a boring fight. He's probably, you know, count him on your hand. You know, most entertaining fighters in mixed martial arts. So, you know, this should be pretty exciting. You know, the minus 150 price is pretty interesting because I do favor Cerrone in this bout, probably more than the minus 150. You know, it's just an interesting play because Cerrone kind of feasts on being the bully, and, you know, and hurting his opposition, while Masvidal, you know, has only been finished, I think the last time it was finished was 2009, so you're going back 7-8 years in time. It's a long time. He's very durable. So that's a pretty interesting caveat in this fight is, I don't see Cerrone getting a finish, so he's going to have to go a full 3 rounds, with Masvidal, who seems to have endless cardio as well. You know, both these guys are pretty well conditioned, so I think this would be a competitive fight. It's going to go to the scorecards, and I see Cerrone winning. You know, the main difference here, I think, is that Cerrone is an aggressor. He likes to bully, like I said, and Masvidal is more of a counter striker. And in this kind of fight, I think the judges will favor the aggressor versus the counter striker. So I do think Cerrone wins. I don't think it's, you know, going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not betting a side in this one, but I do like the over just because of the durability of both fighters. They're both pretty hard to finish, and in particular Masvidal. And that's the one thing you really have to worry about in Cerrone fights. If you're looking to bet totals, is Cerrone is kind of a natural finisher. But I don't see him doing it here. So I think the over 2.5 is a pretty good parlay piece if you're looking for one on the start.
Well, the biggest line on this card here comes in the heavyweight fight. Minus 400 for Francis Ngannou, and I apologize if I butchered his name, but it wouldn't be Bang the Book Radio in an MMA segment if I didn't screw up somebody's name. So, I mean, is there a live dog here in this one because we have that angle of it being a heavyweight fight, or is this line pretty accurate?
Yeah, this is tough because just look at the booking. You're looking at a well-known former world champion fighter in Arlovski, known name, facing who's considered the, you know, the up-and-coming fighter in this weight class, in all of MMA, in terms of the heavyweight division. And so if you're looking at it from that kind of the booking angle, it's obvious that they want Francis Ngannou to win, to be a big name and to move up in this division. He's very marketable. He's a big fighter. He's very muscular. He kind of fits that profile of what you'd expect to see in a heavyweight fighter. And you'd think they'd want him to win in this fight. But this is by far the best opponent he's ever faced. The guys he's beaten in the UFC, for lack of a better term, are either not very good or rather inexperienced themselves. So this is going to be pretty interesting. I mean, I'm surprised by the line. I thought Ngannou would be favored, but it would be, you know, decently less, but I think it's people are taking a leap of faith here, and believing that Ngannou is a top five potential fighter, maybe even higher, in this weight class. So, Arlovski's gotten a lot older. His chin is nowhere near as good as it was. And, he's facing a kind of a young lion, so to speak. I mean, he's not that young. He's about 30 years old, but, you know, for heavyweight purposes in MMA, it's a young heavyweight. I think Ngannou wins here by knockout. I guess it's kind of hard to bet, you know, kind of an unproven fighter at minus 400, though. So kind of a little bit of a buyer beware situation.
Let's jump around the card a little bit here. Let's talk about some of the fights that you really like or maybe some of the more compelling matchups. Where would you go first here?
Yeah, I'd go to the preliminary card, the main fight of the preliminary card between Nate Marquardt and Sam Alvey. Sam Alvey is about minus 150 favorite. And I think that's low. I think he should probably be, you know, about minus 200, minus 210. Because this fight kind of plays out, I think, kind of how some of Alvey's previous fights have gone. He's facing a fighter who doesn't have a good chin. He's very easy to knock out, per se. And Alvey is a guy who, you know, he's not the most, volume heavy fighter on the feet, but once he gets going and he lands a clean strike, he's very likely to finish. Marquardt is certainly a skilled fighter, but I don't see him taking down Sam Alvey in this bout. Alvey's takedown defense is about 90%, so it's very high, very difficult to take down. And forced into a standing exchange, I think he's going to have real problems with Alvey's power. So I like Sam Alvey in this bout. I think that's a pretty compelling price. And, you know, even you can even look at it by knockout, but, you know, I think you'll get about plus money. If there's still the inside the distance yesterday was about minus 105, so you'd think the knockout would be at least a little bit more than that. But honestly, I'd play this one straight. I think Alvey wins by knockout. You can even play it straight, parlay it with the Cerrone Masvidal all over. I think both of those win.
You know what's really interesting about this fight is that Nate Marquardt trains for high altitude martial arts, which, as I just looked it up here, in Aurora, Colorado. So
right.
Maybe that's the reason that this line's a little bit light, because they just assume that, you know, he's obviously trained in altitude, so he should be more accustomed to it.
Yeah, sure. That's true. But I don't think altitude's going to fix his ability to take a punch. So I like Alvey here. I don't think this fight goes long enough for altitude to be a potential factor. So Alvey's definitely one of my stronger sides on this fight. I also like another favorite who's in the prices again around the minus 150 level is Li Jingliang facing newcomer Bobby Nash. Nash, you know, really poor takedown defense, kind of grew up in the Midwest, fighting on the Midwest regional scene. Traditionally, fighters who've come from that Midwest circuit tend to have inflated records, poor level of competition, but they come to the UFC, say, with like a 9-0 record, 11-1 record, something like that. And then they come in, face, you know, kind of a veteran fighter in the UFC and really look lost and not able to compete at this level. So Li Jingliang is a pretty physical fighter, you know, good punching power, able to grapple a bit, pushes fighters against the cage. He's got a pretty good style for MMA. He's not a fighter who's going to be contending for anything in the near future, not even a top 15 ranking. But he's shown that he belongs in the UFC, and he's fought decent level of competition overall. And I think he's going to be too much for Nash here. So I like Li Jingliang at that price as well. So, again, you're getting, you know, two guys I like on this card sitting around minus 150.
Well, and one of the really great things that Jay Primetown does over at MMA Oddsbreaker is scouting reports on these debutant fighters. I presume you've already written the one about Bobby Nash then.
Yes, you can find that one on MMA Oddsbreaker. There's a couple others as well. I have one written up on Alexander Pantoja, who's a flyweight fighter fighting on the UFC Fight Pass portion of the card against another UFC debutant, Eric Shelton. Both these guys were on the last season of The Ultimate Fighter, which was a flyweight tournament, I believe to the quarterfinals of that competition before they were eliminated. Pantoja actually was the number one seed in that tournament, and Shelton, I believe, was like the 15th seed, which I know it's crazy, but Shelton beat the number two seed. They went through different paths of tournaments. They never faced each other, but you know, if you look at the line, the fifth, you know, so just looking at those, you know, rankings per se, Pantoja is actually, you know, is basically even money in this fight against Shelton, even though if you're looking at, like, say, hypothetically a 1 versus a 15 seed from that tournament. I guess you could argue with how they came up with those rankings, but you know, just one way to kind of see it. And you know what? I mean, just looking at both of these fighters, I took a deep dive into both of them. I kind of like Eric Shelton in this fight. He's very athletic. You know, he's got pretty good punching power. He's shown to be, you know, a pretty athletically talented wrestler as well. Pantoja, I think his striking is rather limited. I mean, he's really a kicker, doesn't really have much of punching power. And he's not a great grappler at all. So I think he's going to struggle to get the fight to the ground because his submission game is actually really good. He transitions really well on the mat to different types of submission attempts. And he's dangerous in that regard, but struggling to get the fight to the ground. I think the only way he would get to the ground is Eric Shelton actually taking him to the ground. And then, you know, that would be the only way I see it happening. But I think Shelton, more athletic, more punching power, avoids being submitted from a bad position on the ground. I think Shelton probably takes a decision here. So I do like Eric Shelton here, but I was kind of thinking when the line was going to come out that there would be, you know, some favoritism towards Pantoja because of, you know, he was a bit more highly regarded, you know, heading into that season of The Ultimate Fighter. He was a champion in RFA, which is probably now rather merged with Legacy Fighting Alliance. So the two together, they call Legacy Fighting. It's a combined promotion now. They merged together, and that's probably the top regional promotion in the United States at this point. So it's a decent hype for him. And I thought Pinto was probably going to be -170, -180 at the bout, but closer to even money now, or right around even money. It's just not worth a bet for me. So if Shelton does dip, to +130 or so, I think that would be worth a play. But at this point,
a lot of great thoughts today from Jay Prime.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, go for it.
Yeah. One last bout I kind of want to touch on. And it kind of comes into the, what we were talking about, at the top of the segment on, on Colorado and altitude, is the light heavyweight fight between Marcos Rogério de Lima and Jeremy Kimble. Kimble making his UFC debut as well. He's from Colorado Springs, trains there, so he's training at altitude against a big, heavy Brazilian who's not known for cardio at all. He's a heavy hitter for sure, and big for the weight class, but he's shown in his UFC career previously that he's basically good for 3 minutes, and if he doesn't get a finish in those first few minutes, he slows down tremendously, and that's going to be even accelerated in this fight. So do I think Kimble can survive the 3 minutes? I think he can. He's never been knocked out in his career. He's only been submitted. And Rogério de Lima is, mainly a knockout guy, not a submission guy. So I don't think the submission comes into play in this bout for Kimble. And then after those few minutes, I think, Kimble takes over in the fight as de Lima tires out. So I like Kimble there. He's about +150 right now. I think that's probably the best underdog play on the card.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I know I usually ask you about an underdog. I don't know why I forgot to do that here on this segment. But Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com, what's going on over there at the website in preparation for this weekend's action?
Yeah, kind of 2017 starting off like we ended 2016. A lot of content over at Oddsbreaker. There are video interviews of many of the fighters. Oddsbreaker has a couple guys that really do a great job in interviewing some of the lesser known fighters. So you can pick up some tidbits, in terms of their preparation, how maybe they're looking at each of the fights. And then for me personally, I do fight breakdowns on, a select few of the fights overall, plus my scouting reports on all the new guys. So you can check those out. There are some up already this week, and then there will be others that'll be up, today, tomorrow, and on fight day. So a lot of content to look through as you prepare your bets for Saturday.
At Jay Primetown on Twitter, at MMA Oddsbreaker on Twitter. Jay, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely, Adam. Have a good one.
Really strong stuff there. Great way to wrap up this 90-minute mega show on Bang the Book Radio. Coming up on Friday, for sure we'll get Rob Pozzola of Prediction Machine. We'll chat with him about the early Super Bowl numbers, what the simulations are saying for that, and also take a look at some college basketball and some NHL stuff as well. The NHL heading into the All-Star break here after a busy slate of games tonight. Should have plenty to talk about there with him. Then we'll pick up another guest along the way. Not quite sure who that's going to be. Or who knows, it may just be me, but we'll figure something out and bring you a quality Friday show to wrap up this week of Bang the Book Radio. So I'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.